My name's David Shepherd, and I'm interviewing for the Queer in Brighton project, and it is the 7th of June, 2013, and today I'm interviewing
John Rosewarne
in John's home. And I was just going to start off by asking you, when did you move to Brighton, and what sort of prompted your move down here?
I moved to Brighton in 1969.
Okay.
And the reason I moved to Brighton is because the guy I was living with at the time wanted to come to Brighton. So that's the reason I ended up in Brighton, very luckily, I might say.
Mm.
I'm very happy to come to Brighton.
And what had you known about Brighton before you moved down here? Had you been down here before?
Oh, yes, I used to come most weekends.
Okay.
From London to various clubs and pubs and what have you.
Are there any particular ones that you remember from coming down?
I used to go to the Curtain Club and the Spotted Dog and Dr. Brighton's.
Okay.
And there wasn't that many pubs then. Those are the ones that we used to.
Whereabouts was the Curtain Club?
It was off the seafront. I really can't remember the name of the road. I know we used to go on the seafront and then go up to it. So.
Yeah.
Which was a nice club, actually.
Were they all fairly kind of discreet places, or was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
You used to get quite a lot of ladies there, and ladies that like gay guys.
Yeah.
No, that was a quite happy memories of the Curtain Club.
Yeah.
It was nice. Yes.
And when you moved here, where did you end up living with your partner at the time?
We ended up living in Elm Grove.
Okay.
And from Elm Grove, we went to St James's Avenue to Hanover, from Hanover to Portland Place, which is on the seafront.
Yeah.
Which was quite nice.
So you've lived in quite a big strip, a few different locations around Brighton.
Yeah, always quite central.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had to travel to work, obviously, so...
Did you continue to work in London?
I was working in Hobart Heath, Francis, the local psychiatric hospital.
Yeah.
For 27 years, for my sins.
Wow, so long stretch. Did you find that living in different parts, particular parts of Brighton were kind of easier?
Yes, in St James's Street,
obviously,
and Kemp Town.
Mm.
Kemp Town was probably the easiest place to live, because we were surrounded by, our own kind, which is much easier. That was before I went to Spain, and then I went to Spain for 9 years, and then came back to Brighton.
That was
my later life in Brighton.
Yeah.
Slightly different when I came, because I came down with someone, it was a 40-year relationship, but it was my early life, which is probably the more interesting.
So do you want to tell me a little
bit about
life prior to coming here and how that kind of
When I was 18, my father is that working?
Yeah, it is.
My father caught me in bed with his best friend.
Blimey!
I was 18. The best friend was kind of maybe in his. It was in his 40s. I got the blame, my father threw me out. So I rang another friend in Taunton and I said, I've been thrown out, I don't know what to do, I was going to London. And he had a stepmother who he didn't like, so he said, well, I'll come with you. So can you imagine, 2 18-year-olds, got to the station with 2 carrier bags, and I think we had about £6 between us. So we got to Paddington Station and didn't know what to do.
Had you been to London before?
Not really, no. We got to Paddington Station, it's a great big station, and then my friend got a bit sort of agitated and nervous, so we went, had a cup of tea.
Mm.
And we were sat there and I saw this guy was eyeing us. And he came over and he said, hello boys, are you new in town? So we said yes, or I said yes, he didn't say anything. So he said, have you got anywhere to live? And I said, no. So he said, I've got a room in Eardley Crescent, I'll never forget it, in Earl's Court. He said, but, you know, have you got money? And I said, no. He said, well, we'll have to sort something out, how are you going to pay the rent? So we went and we had this room in Eardley Crescent, and the next day he came up and he said, you know, if you've not got a job, you do have to get some money.
Mm.
He said, do you know Piccadilly Circus? I had no idea what Piccadilly Circus was. Anyway, he took us to Piccadilly Circus and he said, you will be accosted by men and they will offer you money. So, you know, you will go with them and they will give you the money, and at the end of the day we'll sort something out. Anyway, it didn't bother me that much, funnily enough. My friend was a bit more withdrawn, but it didn't bother me, and I thought, you know, I'm here, I've got to do something. So that was the start of the life of a rent boy on Piccadilly Circus. Wow. Which was, they used to call the meat rack.
Yeah.
So after the first day, we went back to the room, and he said, how much money? And he took like 3/4 of it. I think he left us about £4, or something like that, very little, but it was quite a lot in those days. And that was my life for, I don't know, I was 18 until I was about 21.
Blimey. And what were the dates that was that, when did you, what year did you arrive in London?
I was 61.
Mm.
61 I got there. And
do you remember what kind of things you had, did you have to, I know there obviously was, what did you have to wear when you were doing that kind of work? Did you have to be very subtle, or were there signals?
No, there were signals. You wore sort of hankies in your back pocket. And scarves, brightly coloured scarves, and you couldn't miss us, actually. You could not miss us. There was probably 50, 60 guys, and God help you if you went on somebody else's patch. You all had your own little.
Mm.
But it was the police that was so evil to us. You know, they used to come around on a Saturday night, and they used to herd you up and say, you know, put the brace in. They used to handcuff us, take us in the van over to the police station at Earl's Court, and you always made sure that you had 7 and 6, because the fine was 7 and 6. The next day, if you could pay your fine, they let you go. But the other thing with the police, of course, the police were so evil. If you were nice to the policemen, they used to take you into the Regent's Palace Hotel, and if you were nice to them, let you go. Yeah, that was the police. Mm. And then eventually I sort of decided, you know, this is really not. Somebody else told me, a friend, a hooker, female, she said, you know, you're silly standing around on the street, you know, you should really go work for an agency. So she put me in touch with a agency and they took me on, and that was the best part of my early life. I mean, it was brilliant. Very good money.
Yeah.
You handled no money, of course. And we used to go to the House of Parliament, to the Green Room, and, you know, they were all very upmarket. People that wouldn't walk the streets to pick you up, but they used to get you sent to their houses and things. And I did that for, I think, maybe 2.5 years, maybe 3 years.
Then I was up to the age of about, was that up to 23, 24?
About 23, yes. And then one of my clients is the man that I spent 40 years with.
Wow.
Which was, you know, quite unbelievable. Because, you know, when you went with these people, there was a rule that you didn't, there was never any kissing, no kissing, anything else but no kissing, which quite often suited us, you know, because they, although they were quite wealthy people and very clean and smart, they weren't always what you would have
very
said.
Attractive.
No.
Yeah.
So that went on for, yes, as I said, until I was about 23, maybe 24. And this guy used to come. I used to go to his house like a couple of times a week, and he said, you know, I really don't like what you're doing. He said, I think it's time that you got out.
Mm. Did he live in a very posh part of London?
Lived in Pinner, Love Lane and Pinner, in a very nice house.
Mm.
So, and he was in control of quite a few of the big hospitals in London. So he said, what would you like to do? And, you know, if you stop, I didn't really want to stop doing what I was doing. I was quite happy.
Mm.
You know, going to the green room where there was, you could, not that I would ever drop names, but, you know.
There were some quite important people.
Yes, there was. And
how did that make you feel as a sort of young person coming from Taunton, in terms of like going right to the seat of government and seeing?
Well, to be quite honest, I didn't know very much about politics.
Yeah.
And there was one particular guy that used to ask for me all the time, who eventually became the Prime Minister.
Gosh.
So that was. And I couldn't really believe, you know, that this guy was now the Prime Minister. So that was, yes, that was a nice, that was a good time in my life, and I could actually shop in Cecil G and buy the clothes that I wanted, which is all probably a bit fickle, but, you know, it when you had nothing to suddenly being on quite good money, and, you know, people used to say to me, well, how can you go with 5 or 6 men a day or a night? Easy. It was very easy.
Mm.
I mean, because you get very blasé about it, you know. It's a job.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So you do it and you leave. And then at the end of the week we used to get, the money was very good. I mean, then back in the '60s I was probably taking home 50-60 pounds a week.
For a lot of money,
which was
isn't
a
it?
Lot yeah. of money, when you could go and buy a pair of shoes for like 39 and 11, which was under £2. You know, it was yeah, that was fine.
Where were you living when you moved from Earls? Were you living in Earls Court still?
No, because we left. My friend eventually went home. He couldn't cope with it. But I was living in Berwick Street. Do you know Berwick Street?
Mm.
Not a very nice area, full of hookers and stuff. It's great.
Yeah.
Right, quite near Raymond's Review Bar. So that was fine. And then of course when I went with this ex-client, I moved to Pinner, which was very upmarket.
Mm. Do you remember in terms when you were living in Berwick Street, was there quite a sense of community there?
Yeah, it was lovely.
Look out
it
for
was
each
lovely,
other.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because we were all doing basically the same job, the girls were all lovely. I mean, one of my best friend, Big Pat, big blonde hooker, and she kind of took me under her wing, you know, because I was still like only about 20, 21, something like that. And it was a lovely community there, and they had the market, of course, and there was always lots of people mm. around. And you could walk around and nobody ever, I mean, I could walk from like, I don't know, what should we say, Knightsbridge back to Oxford Street and never think anything of it, walking on your own, you know, obviously quite obvious what you were.
Mm.
And never had any problems, funnily enough.
Only from the police, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the police would sort of call you over and you give them a blow job or whatever. And then they let you go.
Yeah.
Which is quite evil.
Mm.
And I don't think police today would even believe that
there was that kind of corruption, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
It was terribly corrupt.
Did you find that when you moved from being kind of street worker to be working for an agency, though, that the police kind of
didn't touch you?
No. So there was a kind of class system within that.
When you went to the green room at the Houses of Parliament, you were let in. They were sort of told ahead that 2 or 3 of us were coming. No problems. Nobody ever took any notice. And it was much easier then. It was the streets that were bad. You used to get beaten up and punched around and what have you.
Are you still in touch with anybody at this point who was, do you remember? Or was,
no, the only, but the last person who I worked with in the agency, sadly, he died. He was a bit older than me, so he was probably about 75. He died. But no, the rest of them, I don't know where they, you know, it was such a, it was a vast community. Although you knew everybody and you spoke to them, you didn't really know anything about them. Like, nobody really knew anything about me. So, no, it was hard, but it's not anything I'm ashamed of.
No.
I'm not, you know, some people say, oh, I wouldn't dream of going on the radio and say that, but why not? You know, it was part of my life. It was a very important part of my life. I became very streetwise.
And were you in touch with your family? Via
No, I didn't see my family for... My mother found me through the Salvation Army. After about 3 years. I didn't go home for many years. My father and I never got on. Right until the day he died. I went to his funeral, but I hadn't seen them. I hadn't seen him or my mother for probably 3-4 years. They just didn't want to know. They don't want to know. Even my mother now, she doesn't want to know. She's not remotely interested in what I do. And we were supposed to be going down to see her, and she said, no, I think you better stay where you are. So she obviously did, but she, you know, she was never maternal anyway. She never wanted children. And when I came, I was sort of fostered out to her mother, looked after me until I was about 10. So there was never any close bond. And my father, well, he was just a... They had a string of hairdressing shops in Taunton salons, and he used to go to church all the time. Typical. But no, there was never any. There was no closeness, or and if I'd been even now, if I was put in a room with him, I wouldn't know what to say to him.
Yeah.
I could never talk to him.
But did you feel like you've kind of found a support network and a adopted? You know, it sounds like this, like the life that you led in London, you had that feeling of community and support was...
It was like an adopted family. And because I'd always like old, I still do, like old men. It was like a sort of, they were like father figures. And you know, when you're 18 and 19, and a lot of older gay men, they like to sort of mother you or smother you or whatever they want to do. But no, there was... I was very happy. I was very happy in one way, but not happy in the way we were treated. You know? But then it was, as I've always said to people, it was my choice. It was a life that I chose. I didn't have to do it because I was a hairdresser. Well, I would be, wouldn't I? And
it's family trade.
But I didn't want to do it. You know, going to London, big London, and then coming to Brighton. Of course, I then did training and became a nurse for like 30 years.
But just quickly, just in relate, just from my own personal interest, which is probably not very very professional interview, but do you remember people like, did you ever see people like Quentin Crisp and that sort of stuff?
I met Quentin, funnily enough, I used to be a dresser at the Theatre Royal.
Yeah.
And I met Quentin Crisp, and you probably don't remember a guy called Gilbert Harding. He was a well-known gay sort of, I don't know what you call them, but could have been, he wasn't an icon because you didn't get things like that in those days, but everybody knew that he was gay, and he used to sort of sit and lord it over and Dr. Bryant and things. Quentin Crisp, I met him, I think he 2 or 3 times at the Theatre Royal. I had a little fling with Larry Grayson. He's now dead, so I can mention his name.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody had a friend. And Russ Conway. Do you know Russ Conway?
I know the name.
Pianist.
Yeah.
He used to live in Eastbourne.
So you've arrived in Brighton with your to start your new life, and in the meantime you've trained to be a nurse.
I was training to be a nurse, yeah.
Yeah. And so then, and then that's when, so you were training when in, you were in Brighton, or you trained?
I trained in London for my general, and then I did my psychiatric at Haber's Heath. And that was all quite difficult, actually, because my partner at the time, John, he was looking after, like, I think three hospitals in Sussex. And he was always very open. So he'd actually trained at St. Francis when he was younger. And there was a lot of the same staff there. So, of course, when I turned up and everybody knew that I was living with him, they all... And I was readily accepted. Not as much in Hillingdon, in London. We were asked to leave. I was halfway through my general training, and the matron found out that I was, he was a tutor at the time, and they found out that we were living together in Hillingdon, and I was told to go first. Told, you're going.
Was that just to do with like nepotism, or just all the accusations that you were?
Just because I was living with him.
And this was pre, because this was pre 67.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was 65, 66, I suppose. And they were quite evil, actually. They sort of drummed me out first, and then John left. They asked him to leave.
So was it kind of blackmail, as it were?
Well, yes, coercion. It was just very uncomfortable. You know, and it was supposed to be a hospital where people are caring, you know.
Mm.
But it didn't work like that for... And there was quite a few of the staff. A lot of the staff were gay, obviously. But they were probably a little bit cleverer than we were, because nobody ever knew... But because of his position in the hospital, it was all slightly different. You know, they knew that I was living with him. Not that I ever went around and told people I was living with him. But they eventually found out, so... And that's when we came to Brighton, that was another good time for me, you know. We were actually getting away from all this nonsense in London, and I think, you know, like 25, whatever I was, it was the start of a new life. Although I was always quite promiscuous, and we did have an open relationship.
Mm. Mm.
He did what he wanted to do, I did what I wanted to do.
Was that just in sort of the clubs and all that sort of stuff, or were you kind of cottaging and stuff like that as well? Or?
Do you know the Bushes?
Oh, what, the Duke's Mound? Yeah.
I spent half my life there. And if I wasn't there, he was.
A friend of mine did that as well. Another friend of mine did that as well.
Yeah. It was lovely. Oh, I mean, that was like a club.
Yeah.
If you went to the Bushes, I'm talking about like 25 years ago, 30, it was just like a club. Everybody knew each other. They used to take a flask and give you a cup of coffee, or if they had a sandwich, they'd give you a sandwich. And you could stay there sort of all day, and nobody ever bothered you. I mean, I haven't been there for ages. I don't know what to say. They cut all the Bushes down, did they?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've definitely tidied it up.
That was totally evil.
Yeah.
I mean, chopping down the Bushes.
It's a local landmark, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. And there were so many cottages in Brighton. I mean, there was one right opposite. You're not old. How old are you?
28.
Oh, no, you wouldn't be old.
Was that opposite the Theatre Royal?
Yes.
I mean, I've heard about this one.
Well, it was so funny. That was like a club.
Yeah.
You used to meet everybody down there, and the man that used to run it, if you give him a pound, used to let you go in his little office. Anyway, when they eventually started closing down all these cottages, the first one to go was the one I was at the Theatre Royal. And do you know Maisie Trollett?
Mm.
Do you know Maisie? Well, she decided that we were all going to go and have a service, a funeral. And we all took wreaths.
Amazing.
And hung on, you know, the railings. Hung all wreaths on the railings. That was... And then, of course, when they closed that one, bang, 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 they all went.
What was this kind of... was this the early 90s, or was this earlier than that?
Earlier than that. 82, 83, something like that. Early 80s. Mm. And then, of course, bang, 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 they all went. There was one in Queen's Road they used to call the Bungalow, which is... just before you get to the station, there was like a fork in the road which goes down to I don't know where, and there was a just a one story building, and it was called the bungalow, and there was always somebody on watch. They used to take it in turns, you know. So if anybody was coming in that they didn't know, they used to sort of cough or whatever, and everybody would then split up. Then there was the hole in the wall. Have you heard of that? That was down on the seafront. I did a terrible thing once in there. I went in and it was so pitch black. They'd smashed all the light bulbs, pitch black. And I genuinely wanted to pee. And I went in with a friend and I lit my lighter. Illuminated the whole place. And what was going on was unbelievable. And they all sort of screamed and but it all used to, it was good fun.
Yeah.
You know? It was all, well, you say innocent. It was innocent. I mean, nobody used to get beaten up, or very rarely you heard of people being beaten up or murdered or what have you. Yeah, so that was all very sad when they closed those down. And now there's nowhere to go for a pee.
No.
You know,
even if you did want to pee, yeah, just to pee.
British home stores. Mind you, Debenhams.
I know I've heard about the library, about Jubilee Library as well.
And the museum.
Mm.
You should take a trip and check it out, see what's happening.
Local, yeah. They have to, people have to go somewhere.
Yeah, there was...
Did you feel like that was was there stuff in the press about it at that point, or was it mostly just... Was it quite... Did they just close with no real explanation?
The only one that had any, the only one that was, you know, sort of became, I think it was in the Argus, was the one I was at the Theatre Royal. You know, because, I mean, and with all the wreaths hanging off it, and flowers and stuff, it was like a funeral. You know, well, it was dead, you know, and it was a big part of
people's lives.
Lives, and it was gone, you know, and that was all, it was all very sad, really. And that's when everybody sort of decided, well, the Bushes was much busier after that closed.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I suppose some people would say it's really not a good thing to say that life was better then. I don't know. I think it was I think it was easier probably then when you had all the cottages around. Because people could go and they could get rid of all their frustration, and half of them were married anyway. So at least there was somewhere for them to go, whether it was right, whether it was wrong, that's not the point. But there was somewhere for them to go, you know, but now there's...
It's all online now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Which is a bit less.
Yeah. It's just
a bit less fun to it. Yeah, I think it's a bit more. It's a bit a lot colder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like when Pride started. I mean, that was brilliant when it first started. Now it's just become a carnival.
Nobody. Do you remember? I mean, I'm sort of jumping around quite a lot, which is probably not that useful. But do you remember the first Pride?
Yes. On the level.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it actually meant something. That did mean something. But I don't think Pride now doesn't. I don't know. It is basically, as I said, it's a carnival, isn't it? You know, it's just, that seems to be more important for them to go out and get totally smashed out of their head. I think people forget what it actually means. You know, especially youngsters.
Do you think? Do you find, were you ever kind of involved in Pride or volunteering or anything, or politically?
Because I belong to GEMS, which you've obviously heard of, which is where Leslie got from Steve. Yes, we used to do Pride. We used to be on the Mayor's bus.
Brilliant.
Or the Oak Queen.
Don't want to walk it.
So we were all on the bus with the mayor, which was quite good. But then they started charging so much. I think it was the last time for one person to go on the mayor's bus, £40.
Gosh.
So if there was like half a dozen of us from GEMS that would do it, they couldn't afford it. So sadly that was stopped.
But do you remember the stuff around sort of like Section 28 and all that stuff in the early 90s? Did that have any impact on you, or were you,
no, not really.
Were you kind of past that?
I was past that then.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. You see, maybe I... It's quite difficult for me to say. I suppose when I was the age... In the 90s, from 91 until 99, I was living in Spain. Living in Marbella, so I didn't really, I wasn't really here then.
What had prompted that move? Was that moving with your partner over?
Yes, well, I took early retirement because they closed the hospital and they were offering me various jobs, and I was 50 years old, so I didn't, 48, 49, something like that. So I took early retirement. And he'd already retired because he was 17 years older than me. And we had a villa in Marbella anyway. So we decided we'd sell up here and go to Spain and live, which was good. And I worked in a, I used to do drag at one time. And I worked in a big drag bar in Marbella, which was quite good fun. And
what was your drag character?
Dusty Monroe. After Dusty Springfield and Marilyn, of course.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Were you? Did you sing, or were you more of a sort of lip syncer?
Lip syncer.
Yeah.
It was more fun.
Yeah.
Because you could do more characters. You know, I couldn't sing like Marilyn or Dusty or, you know, so. No, and I did that for. I did that most of my life, actually.
Really? Did that start in London, or did that start?
It started in London. Yeah. We used to do a club called The Rehearsal and The Black Cat and various other London pubs. Didn't do it much here, actually. When I came to Brighton, I didn't, because I was working, you know, and I was working night duty and what have you. I used to do the odd few shows at the hospital for them. And we used to go to all the drag balls and famous Porchester Hall.
And what was that?
Oh, Porchester Hall was the big drag ball. I mean, they came from everywhere. I mean, they're like a huge place in London, and everybody used to go, you know. If they never dragged up before, they drag up to go there. You know, so that was quite fun.
Yeah.
And then they used to have them in the corn exchange here.
Ah.
Brilliant. Really good. And then suddenly that all stopped. I don't know whether, for what reason they stopped that. Well, because people, if they want to wear a drag, they just walk around the street, can't you? It doesn't make any difference. You know, you haven't got to wait to go on a stage in a pub to dress up. They just do it and walk around. But no, there's, and then of course we had the first really nice gay pub in Brighton was the Rockingham.
Whereabouts was that one?
Off of Western Road in Hove.
Oh.
Because I used to work in the Rockingham Bar in London, and it was owned by Toby Rowe, and he decided that he was going to open a pub here. So he opened a pub, very nice, quite upmarket, and sadly had a heart attack before he opened it.
Aww.
So he died before he opened it. But that was a nice pub, and they had two the landlord and his wife were absolutely brilliant.
What has that turned into now? Is that are they changing?
Do you know where the Bedford Tavern is?
Yeah.
Well, the Bedford Tavern's sort of down there on the left-hand side. Coming back up to Western Road, it's on a corner.
And yeah.
It could be, I don't know what it's called now.
I think I know where you mean.
It goes around the corner.
Mm. Yeah. Is it sort of further towards Palmyra Square, or is it kind of,
where the Bedford Tavern is, the Bedford Tavern's here,
yeah,
and then you walk up the road, and the Rockingham was on the corner,
right? Yeah,
it was called something funny like the Squeaky Duck or some funny thing like that,
yeah,
but that was very good. Nice. It was, yeah. It was a little bit upmarket too. Mm.
So how quickly did you find that the pubs all changed from, like, post 67? Was it in terms of becoming a bit less sort of underground, was it?
Yes.
Was it very, very rapid, or was it?
It was quite rapid in Brighton, yes. It changed quite very quickly. Yes. It was almost going from like black to white. It was that quick because everybody was so much freer.
Yeah.
Nobody really worried. But and there was quite a few. There was another nice club, but I can't remember where it is. It was near where that Day's restaurant is, you know, the Chinese restaurant. Yeah. It was just down the road from there, but I can't think what that was called. That was a big, quite a nice club. And then we had, of course, every Sunday we had the Pink Coconut at the bottom of West Street.
Okay.
Which is now another nightclub. It used to be called Sherry's originally. Then it went to the Pink Coconut. You know the nightclub at the bottom of West Street?
Yeah.
As you're going down on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
And
is that the one that's got a blue, it's got a blue plaque on it, yes. I think. I can't remember who lived there, but yeah. You kind of think, God, if they could see it now.
Yeah. And it was, we used to get all the big, I mean, in those days, the big stars, you know, like Divine. Do you know Divine?
Yeah, yeah.
Divine, we used to go there a lot. And all the Bucks Fizz, I mean, can you imagine? Everybody used to go mad for Bucks Fizz. Used to get every Sunday.
Yeah.
And it was owned by Bolts, which was a nightclub in London.
Mm.
And they used to just do every Sunday here. Used to be absolutely heaving.
Mm.
Brilliant.
And with this, this was kind of, I suppose, late 80s.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Early 80s.
Okay.
Early 80s. Because we went to Spain in 1991, probably at 81.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So
just yeah, so I was wondering, when were you a dresser then at the Theatre Royal? What was
in the 80s.
Was that one of your, was that just a sort of part, a job on the side?
Yeah, when I wasn't doing nights at the hospital.
Yeah.
I used to dress in there, which was good fun.
Yeah.
And they had a lovely manageress, a manager, they called her a manager, Anne Travers. She was brilliant. Yeah, that was good days.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised at the, you know, who's gay and who's not. Very interesting, actually. But,
was that a bit of an eye-opener for you as well? Or was or had you already come into contact with that?
I'd already come into contact with that type of thing, so it didn't really... I was never shocked at anybody who was, you know, I think, no, I wasn't. Never battered an eyelid, you know, if somebody was, but of course you never, I don't like people that name drop.
No, of course.
And I think that's very unkind.
No, I do
name
well,
drop,
yeah.
You know.
So what's, but in terms, what kind of shows were happening at that point? Was the theatre world, were they doing... Was
plays,
it,
yeah, musicals.
So sort of big touring things were coming out.
And you used to get all the big stars, Peter O'Toole, Charlton Heston, cool. All used to be there.
Well, how things have changed.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was a nice, well, it's a nice theatre anyway.
It's beautiful, yeah.
Although the back of it's not so good. Used to follow a rat up the stairs or something like that, you know. But no, that was good. That was another good part of my life. So all in all, I've always said to people, you know, if I dropped her tomorrow, I would have had a good life.
Done a lot of different
kinds
of
different things.
Yeah.
Enjoyed my life. Even nursing psychiatric patients, I loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
So no, I've some things I think, well, maybe I like my early life, walking the streets, not the type of thing you would really boast about, but you can talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind talking about it. I wouldn't say everybody should do it, because of course they shouldn't, because everybody's not, we're not all the same.
You're not, some people just aren't psychologically able to
cope with that.
Yeah.
But I think I was very lucky with my, lucky with my life.
Well, so in just very briefly, just in terms of sort of now getting older and kind of, I suppose, because the gay scene, so a lot of it is so much more focused on kind
young
of being young and
yes.
that kind of thing. I mean, how have you found that? Is it stuff, things like, when did you join GEMS, for instance?
Oh, I joined GEMS, I was about, I don't know, 63, 64, I suppose. About 7 years ago. Not really. I enjoy going, and I do like older men, but some of them are very old. Yeah, much old.
Yeah.
It's a nice place for elderly people to go. It's somewhere where we can go, and you mix with your own age group.
Yeah.
And some of them, I think you have to be 50 to join. So some of them are 50.
Some of them are not 50. That's a huge difference in generation, isn't it?
And of course, you are inclined when you go to these places, you do sit with only who you want to. And
yeah.
I don't know a lot of them, even don't know their names, you know, because I'm not, not that I'm not interested, because you all sit with your own mates.
And then these people that you've known, you recognise from the scene in the 80s.
Yes.
And that kind of thing, yeah.
70s.
Gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I knew Peter Otto, who runs.
Yeah.
I knew him back in the 70s when he had hair. You know, so.
You know all the secrets.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's all. Yes, yeah. And even if I don't recognise them, because people said I've not really changed, I'm old now, but facially I've not changed a lot. So a lot of people recognise me, but I don't recognise them, which is a bit dodgy sometimes.
It's a bit strange.
Wolf sometimes says, well, how do you know him? I don't know. Just something that passed in the night, I suppose, in the bushes.
Yeah.
Something like
that.
But no, you know, I sometimes feel a bit sorry for these very young ones, like 17 and 18 year olds. They've got a clue. They think it's all, you know, they think it's always been like this. You know, and I think it really does some good sometimes to sit down and listen to how people of my age, like 70 or even 60 upwards.
Yeah.
It was very difficult.
It was not long ago either.
It's not, you know, I don't feel 70 now. I feel about 20 up here.
Yeah.
I mean, don't look at the face, but, you know, it's... I don't know. I do feel that it's not things aren't too easy for them. That's not what I mean. I don't mean things because it's nothing's easy if you're gay anyway. We know that. But
they're just missing out on
something. There's something missing.
Yeah.
When they take everything for granted. I mean, from like 1970 onwards, we were so happy. We were so pleased. We were released. You know. You could do what you wanted, basically, you know. But now, you know, when this friend across the road, her grandson's just told his mum that he's gay, he's 15, and he's acting like a total prat. You know, he's walking around with all the hands. And I said to him, I said, you know, you don't have to behave like that. You don't have to be flapping your hands around and talking in the silly little voice that you suddenly developed. Why are you doing it? Well, because I'm gay. No, you know, this is not the way.
That's not your identity,
no,
is it?
Yeah. No, you know, I said to him, I'm sure there's something else about you that is far nicer than this silly behaviour that you do, and this silly talk, this voice he puts on, and all that type of thing. I mean, when I was young, you wouldn't dare do that. I mean, you'd have been slaughtered. So, sometimes I think...
It's empty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose maybe we should be lucky we came up the hard way. You know, I don't know.
I mean, even me at the age of 28, I look at people that are 17 and 18 now and think that experience was so different from my experience.
Yeah,
so much has changed in the last 10 years. So
you can imagine how we feel now when we were 18 to seeing these youngsters now. I don't know, this is you know, and maybe in 10 years' time, God knows, what will it be like in 10 years' time?
So there were just a couple of other things that I just wanted to ask you about, if that's all right, which was particularly... Well, I don't want to take up all your time. No, it's fine. It's because it's been super duper interesting talking to you. So, but I mean, because I don't want to dwell on things that are particularly depressing either. But do you remember through the '80s and things, especially in Brighton, as to what things like the AIDS crisis and that time and how that kind of
that actually changed everything.
Mm.
It changed the way everybody, anybody with any sense, brain. It changed the whole attitude of how you behaved.
Mm.
I mean, you know, I think when it first came out, and there was a film, and it was called Longtime Companion.
Mm.
If you ever get a chance to see it, you'd probably still be able to get it somewhere.
Okay.
It was brilliant.
Mm.
And it was one of the first films about AIDS, and I think that film is really what registered in a lot of people's minds. Because we didn't really know what was going on. I mean, you knew it was supposed to be a gay disease. Well, you know, a gay disease.
Mm.
You know, what is this gay disease?
It's just terrifying, isn't it?
You know, and then, I'm not joking, the cottages used to be empty. The bushes. Everybody sort of suddenly withdrew into their own little world and thinking, you know, because they said you could get it through kissing and all that, which is a load of nonsense, as we know. But no, that did change everybody's attitude. You actually thought about what you were doing, actually thought about taking care of yourself, protecting yourself, you know. Whereas before, nobody used to bother with condoms, and not when I was young anyway, didn't really know what they were.
Well, everything you could get was curable, wasn't it?
Yeah, much? I mean, I think I got gonorrhea a few times, but you just went to the clinic and they give you some penicillin and off you go, and don't come back too soon, you know. And it was totally different. Again, whether it was good, whether it was bad, that you could be so free with yourself, I don't know. But maybe that is one thing I do feel sorry for the youngsters for now.
Mm.
You know, because the kids of today are no different than the kids when I was young. You know, they're all horny.
You don't think about it.
You know, you see something, you want it.
Mm.
And we could do it then because there wasn't this awful illness going around, as they like to call it, or disease or whatever. So yes, I think it changed a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
It changed my life.
Did you lose quite a lot of friends?
A lot of friends.
Yeah.
A lot of friends. Sadly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's... But now, of course, I think there's probably more heterosexual people dying of it than there are. I don't know. I don't really know the
statistics around it. Yeah, I know a lot of people that are kind of affected by it, and I think it's still, I guess it's just made that change from being a disease to being a manageable condition, which is an amazing thing. But
well, quite a few of our friends are carrying.
Mm. Yeah.
They're carriers.
But yeah.
They seem okay.
Yeah.
They live quite a normal life.
Yeah.
And of course then you get the awful thing about it, I think it was when it first all this happened, you had somebody that had AIDS, say I had AIDS, and you had this stinking attitude of somebody gave it to me, so I pass it on.
Mm.
And that happened a lot.
Do you remember stuff in the press down here and all around that time?
Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was awful.
Awful.
You know, it was just not nice.
Mm.
So I thought, you know, now it's all out in the open, I think it's much better. Kids do take care of themselves, hopefully.
Although it's apparently on the rise again, which is just crazy. Yeah, I think because people know that there's a treatment for it.
Well, yeah.
It changes.
Yeah, but then it's not always gonna.
No, exactly.
It's not always gonna work, is it?
Mm.
You know, then you get these. I mean, we went to see the Lady Boys, and there was a couple of guys dressed up, drag. And we went to the toilet and I think Wolf went first and I went first. Anyway, he was standing outside. And when I came out, there was one of these guys in drag rubbing himself all over and wrapping her legs, his legs around him and all that type of stuff and asking for sex. You know, and he said, no, I think he said something like, you know, oh, this is all I need, somebody like you hanging around me. But I couldn't believe it, how openly they were
soliciting.
You know, they were sort of all over him.
Yeah.
And he's an old man. Mm. You know, and I think, you know, just say he'd been that type that said, yeah, okay, come on. You don't know what you're...
No.
They've been drinking anyway, so... You know, we all know what we're like when we've been drinking. Things all change.
Mm.
But now it's always, I don't know. It's, just,
It's a different thing, isn't
it? We have the older you get, I think you get a little bit more respect for yourself. Yeah. Sort of. When you get to 70, you get more respect.
The height of respect.
It's the height of respect when you get to 70. But as I said, I don't feel 70 and I don't...
Yeah.
I don't dress like I'm 70, and some people say, oh, you know, you shouldn't be wearing this or wearing that. Why?
Mm.
You know, just because I'm 70, do I have to go around in beige trousers and beige anorak?
Get your slacks out.
You know, this is not... And I think so many people are like that now. You know, they don't dress their age. I mean.
Quickly, do you... Things like, obviously when civil partnerships came in.
We did our civil
partnership. Have you done your civil partnership?
Yeah.
What was, I can see you've got your two grooms.
Two little grooms.
That's lovely. Oh, marvellous. Just a photo of, oh wow. That is a great cake. And a great meringue as well.
Notice I'm wearing white.
You are.
That's a joke.
No, what did you do it very, very soon after it
No, we only did it 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Basically, one of the reasons being, because it covers yourself with grabbing families.
Because
That happened to me when my partner 40 years died.
Really?
They actually, his family, who we never knew or saw, who wanted nothing to do with us, everything was left to me, obviously, and they contested the will, and they got it because I was nothing.
Really?
After 40 years, I was just Klaus's friend, and I couldn't afford to take them to court because they had all the money. And
any more tea?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah.
Sure. So that was one of the reasons we did it.
That's unbelievable, though. 40 years.
Yeah, and I was nothing. And they contested the will and they got it. And they very kindly said to me, oh, well, you can keep the flowers. Yeah. And they all live in Brighton and I see them all the time. If they were down, I'd kick them further. Yeah, they got it. So when we decided after a few years that it was nothing to do with, well, it was something to do with dress up, of course it was. I love wearing a white suit. No, seriously, it was basically to cover. I mean, if anything happened to me, I don't think my family would, but you don't know.
Mm.
You know, when people die, they're suddenly there. They're like hawks.
Vultures.
Yeah, grab. And I don't, Wolf's family's all in Germany. He doesn't think they would, but I said, you can't be sure.
Once it's happened to you once.
Well, yeah, it makes you very wary. So that is why we did it.
Mm. How long have you been with Wolf?
Only 5 years.
Okay.
Five years. So we did it after 2 years together.
Mm.
And we had a lovely big party. Invited everybody, you know. Because we've got a lot of heterosexual friends, you know, married couples.
Yeah.
Which I quite like.
Mm.
I like spending time with women, actually. I like women. So, Yeah, it was a lovely day. Everything went fine.
Yeah, it was nice. But you felt like it's obviously a great excuse for a party, but mostly was for securing
exactly.
your...
Exactly, yeah. That was the main reason.
Yeah.
It was nothing to do with, you know, wearing a ring, although we do wear one.
Mm.
But it doesn't make any difference to me. It doesn't make me love him anymore just because we did a civil ceremony or vice versa. Mm. It's just that we feel more
secure.
Mm. I'm happier now that we've done it.
Yeah.
So quite a few of our friends have done it actually. But yeah, that was quite a good move.
Yeah.
Not that I'm particularly bothered about these gay weddings, not gay marriages in the church. It doesn't really, that doesn't appeal to me. I'm not religious, so it doesn't really appeal to me. Yeah. Civil ceremony's fine.
Yeah.
Because so many people do civil ceremonies now anyway. Heterosexual couples, they nearly all get married in the registry office. So no, that doesn't. I suppose if somebody really wanted to get married in church, that's fine. You know, it's their choice, isn't it? Mm. If they want to wear a big meringue dress, okay, that's all right. Yeah. But no, that was a nice little interlude. And what else can I tell you?
I know. Well, I was going to say, is there anything?
I hope I've bored you.
No, it's been lovely. It's been a really lovely experience. I mean, is there anything that you feel like you've sort of missed out particularly that you've?
No, I don't think.
We've
gone from 18 to 70.
That's
quite
we've done the whole. Quite I'm trying to think if there's anything particular on my. I've got one more question, which is, this is specifically related to this project, which is, and I probably should have been asking this as I was going along, actually, but that's just the way my brain works. Yeah. Which is, in terms of the sort of way that you've, when you were kind of in the. Going to clubs and stuff in the 60s versus kind of now, what were people kind of calling each other? What was there were like terms that
yes,
you used
yes, there was
to
also
people?
The Vomi Poloni stuff, you know, like from, yes, they all had, there was like sort of secret words.
Yeah.
I can't really remember what they are now, but there was a lot of sort of camp.
Was that the sort of Polari kind of,
that
sort of stuff?
All
that
type of stuff.
Yeah.
I used to get totally confused with that. I mean, I used to say something that was totally wrong. I was never really into that, but a lot of people were. Because there used to be a programme called Round the Horn with Hugh Paddock, who had a thing with Hugh Paddock for many years. And he used to be Sandy, I think, and with Kenneth Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they used to do all this Palomi talk, and it kind of caught on. You know, but then when I used to say to him, he couldn't remember half of what he used to say. So it was just made up as you went along, but of course, people latched onto it.
Mm.
And it was, that was quite fun.
Mm. When did people sort of drop that? Was that kind of more?
I think in the 80s, you know, and of course, people, we always used to dress nicely to go to clubs. I mean, if you went to a club, you used to spend sort of hours getting ready.
Mm.
You know, you had special club clothes and, you know, you spent hours doing your hair because we had hair then. And
what were you wearing then in the 80s? What was your favourite outfit?
I used to love flares.
Yeah.
Tight flares, but big, you know, with the wide bottoms. And I used to like clogs. And they used to be sort of blue with orange diamonds on them and all that type of stuff. And chiffon shirts, multicoloured, a scarf, wrapped around, flowing on, you know. Yeah, it was. But now you see, if you went to a club dressed smart, you'd feel so out of place.
Mm.
Whereas when we used to dress to go out clubbing and all that, it was a big thing. You took time, you know. And, used to love it if you had something new. But God help it, if you walked in and somebody had the same shirt on as you, you know, from CNA, or somebody had
Were there particular shops that you really liked going to that were good for that sort of stuff in Brighton?
CNA.
Was it CNA?
CNA was good.
Yeah.
Because it was reasonably cheap. And it was quite fashionable.
It was quite continental, wasn't it, back in the day?
Yeah. Well, Wolf goes to Germany quite a lot now, and they've still got CNA in Germany. So I always tell him, bring me back a couple of shirts, you know. But where else have we used to? What? There used to be a nice little shop. I used to, Kensington Gardens, they had Bieber.
Oh, okay.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Occasionally you buy something in Bieber.
When you're feeling a bit flush.
Yeah. When you had a bit of money, you go to Bieber. Mostly C&A.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, of course, Primark opened, which was...
Changed the whole game, didn't it?
I mean, you wouldn't bother to go to Bieber. Yeah. But, no, it was all... I don't know how... We never go to clubs now for the simple reason, as you were saying, everybody's so young.
Mm.
You know, if you walk into a club, I couldn't think of going into Revenge. I mean, you'd be mobbed by... You know, there's all these youngsters there, and you do feel a bit... although my brain's still 20, my body's not, so that...
Do you remember the Revenge and stuff like when that first opened?
Yes, yeah.
Were you going when
yes,
it was...
Yes, yeah, when it first opened.
Yeah. Was it pretty much the same?
Same. Still the same. Not much has changed in there, really. Because you've got all these other little clubs now. There's one, is it called Poison Ivy?
Oh, yeah, the one at the end of St. James
yeah,
Street.
I've
walked past it.
Yeah, I've walked past it.
It looks a bit intimidating to
totally. We walked past it. One of our friends, who's sort of 66, 67, he actually joined it. And he said he felt very intimidated because they do a lot of no clothes. And
oh, no, the Subline as well, isn't it?
Yeah, they do no clothes
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I couldn't imagine going into a club and taking off my clothes. I mean,
all the mystery out of
I
it.
I mean, maybe when I was younger I might have, but
yeah.
not now.
Yeah.
But they'd all run. They'd run screaming out of the doors, you know, see an old man. Yeah, but that...
So if you were going to go for a drink now, would it be places like Camelford Arms and that sort of stuff?
No, if we go for a drink now, one of my favourites is, I like Legends.
Yeah.
I like 112 Church Street,
because
we're a friend of Colin's.
Mm.
We used to love the aquarium, the fish tank, but then poor Michael died. Did you know Michael?
He was, I didn't know.
He died, he was the last landlord.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah, no, I read about that in GC.
Died, so I think his girl's got it now. Not
100%. Oh, and I think a chap's bought it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's being refurbished at the moment.
Oh, perhaps we'll go in and have a look, because when Michael closed it, we used to like that. And I quite like the Marine Tavern, funny, do you?
Yeah.
Pokey little place.
Yeah.
Quite fun.
Yeah.
Quite like the barman there. And the new one in, is it called 156?
Oh, the one that's opposite the dome?
No.
That's...
The one that's opposite the Queen. St. James's Street?
Oh, yes.
You know the Queen's Head, the Queen's Arms?
Yeah.
It's a new one. I think it used to be called the Queen's Arms.
Yeah.
Queen's Head. It's now Bar 56.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Quite a bit noisy. But no, that's okay.
And you still see familiar faces, presumably, from...
Yeah. The only place I won't go is the Bulldog.
Yeah. They're doing a big refurb there at the moment.
I think they need to. The last time we went in, there's somebody Mickey Finn my drink.
Really?
I've been in since. I couldn't move. I was stuck to the floor. I mean, it's over. That's so. Have you been in? No, that's all. It used to be filthy.
Well, I've been into the Bulldog, but not for a while.
Carpet used to be so filthy you couldn't move. But they do drag in there now, so maybe they've brightened it up a bit. I don't know.
I think it's definitely sort of, it's the oldest, do you remember, because that's the oldest.
Yeah, that was one of the first, yeah.
That was 79 or something, wasn't it?
When that opened, it was the Rockingham, which I told you about,
with
the upmarket one, and the Bulldog.
Mm.
So certain people used to go to the Rockingham, and certain people used to go to the Bulldog.
Yeah.
We always went to the Rockingham, for some reason. It was a nicer.
Yeah.
It was a nicer type of man there, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Bulldog. I've been in the Bulldog probably 4 years now. I wouldn't go in.
Mm.
Do you go to the Camelford?
I know. It seems to be the kind of one of the nicer places to go now.
Because it used to be called. It was called the Camelford. Then it became the White Horse.
Mm.
Then it became the Camelford again.
Yeah.
But I think they do quite good food there. So
yeah. Because I know it used to be the St. James's Tavern as well.
Yeah.
That was the other big one that used to alternate, I think, with the Bulldog.
Yeah.
And then the Marlborough. Do you remember the Marlborough when that was a gay man's pub?
Yes. And then it became girls, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because when we went to that play that they mentioned me in, it was the Piccadilly Circus era that they mentioned, we were the only two guys in there. Not that I don't mind lesbians.
No.
I've got nothing against, you know.
Mm.
We've got some sort of very good lesbian friends.
But do you remember what, just out of personal curiosity, do you remember what that was like when that was a gay man's pub?
It was very similar to it. It hadn't really changed.
Really?
No. I mean, when it was a gay guy's pub, it was like every other pub. It was always quite pleasant.
Yeah. And was the theatre running at that point?
It was, but not quite as much as it is now, because you do quite a lot of stuff up there.
Yeah,
don't you?
It's quite busy, yeah.
Yeah, no, it used to be the odd thing up there. They used to do, well, when they first started the gay pantomimes, they used to have them up there, you know, before they moved on to wherever they go now.
Yeah.
So,
it used to be,
yeah. Can't think of any other. All I keep thinking about is that poison ivy. Every time I go past you, well,
that's always an interesting.
Well, Betty Swallock standing outside. Do you know Betty Swallock?
Yeah. Gosh.
Beauty.
Yeah.
No, the Beast. We should say no. I mustn't be unkind about Betty.
We'll cut that bit out of the interview. I know that won't make it into the book.
I know Betty quite well.
Yeah.
She's okay.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to me. It's been really, really interesting.
Hope I haven't bored you.
Not at all. Not in the slightest. I think you've had a... Definitely, I'm going to turn off the old recorder now.